Hello? Is there anybody there?
This is you, lost in the barren wasteland of the NFL offseason.
Hello?
Lost and without guidance. It's a lonely and dangerous place out there. But look up. You have found that guidance. You have found the red zone.
Chris Johnson now lines up again. Nobody's covering him. Nobody's covering Chris Johnson. Wow! There he goes again!
So what do you get when you listen to the Red Zone?
We'll give you all the NFL free agency talk you can handle as we follow the ever-changing landscape of the NFL.
LaDainian Tomlinson apparently has come out and said that he will not take a pay cut to stay with the San Diego Chargers.
You can also get all the NFL draft coverage you can handle here. We'll cover all the big events leading up to the draft in April.
This is the most important position on the field.
And we'll have all the latest breaking news throughout the offseason.
We have Pete Carroll, who is he has now agreed to be the GM and head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. And don't forget to look out for some of our special guests as well. So keep it here if you know what's good for you, because this is the Red Zone on Calm Radio.
Welcome into the Red Zone today, April 30th, 2010. It is the final version of the original Red Zone. I am John Walk, but not sitting alongside me is Thomas Frank Carr. He's running a little late. He's actually going to join us about 30 minutes into the show at the 1:30 p.m. mark, so he'll be out here later. But on the show today, in our first segment, we have all the draft recap for you. Obviously, Sam Bradford taken number one overall for the St. Louis Rams. We'll get to the Tim Tebow selection, our thoughts on that, as well as Dez Bryant and Jimmy Clausen falling. In the second segment, we actually speak with Denver Post Mike Kliss. He covers the Broncos for the Post. Before we found out in the interview that before the draft actually started, Kliss was the man who predicted the Broncos would select Tim Tebow in the first round. So we'll get his thoughts on that. And he actually defends Tebow in that selection. He defends the Broncos in making that selection. So stay tuned for that. And in the third and fourth segments, we have our headline segments. That's right. Normally we do it to start off the show, but we're waiting because we want to touch on the NFL draft first. Obviously, that being big news last week as we're kicked off the air for our live coverage of the NFL draft. We had Dan Karpinski and Brian Tripp out there providing all the, I guess, sounds and what have you from Radio City Music Hall. So we'll get to that. But yeah, we'll touch on all the headlines later on, as well as some interesting news. Kevin Cobb getting an extension. Ryan Clady, the offensive tackle for the Denver Broncos, tore his patella tendon. And guess what? It has to deal with Brett Favre. That's right. He came out to talk to ESPN today to tell them something that will have a dramatic decision on whether he comes back or actually will retire. So we'll get to that later on in the show. But leading us off right now, that's right, I'm flying solo. T. Frank, as I said, he'll be joining us about the 1:30 mark. So right now, I want to touch on the NFL draft. Obviously, Sam Bradford taken number one overall by the St. Louis Rams. That's right. And we all know Tim Tebow, later on, he was drafted in the first round. But the interesting thing here to bring up, Sam Bradford taken number one overall. If the St. Louis Rams would have known that Jimmy Clausen would be around to start off the top of the second round, would the St. Louis Rams possibly have maybe taken Ndamukong Suh with a first overall pick? That would give them Suh in the first round, Clausen in the second round, as compared to what they have now. Sam Bradford taken number one overall. And then in the second round, St. Louis Rams take Roger Saffold, the offensive tackle, out of Indiana. We don't know. The thing is, I want to touch on here, Sam Bradford obviously doesn't really have any questions about his character. He has an awesome arm. The main flaw for him is his injury to his shoulder. Doesn't know how to fall on his shoulder correctly. Had it injured twice in his Oklahoma career. Didn't finish out the year for the Sooners this past season, but he's rehabbed it. I actually just read an article in Sports Illustrated about that rehab from a couple weeks ago. That Sports Illustrated from a couple weeks ago, and he's been doing a lot. He's been working with a lot of guys, and apparently he's doing the same thing that Joe Montana did 30 years ago when Montana separated his shoulder in college and apparently Bradford, it might work out. So I like the pick for the St. Louis Rams. Obviously, he's not going to have that many weapons around him. The offensive line is a question mark, so it's going to be interesting because he's not going to have that much protection. So if he gets hit, he's going to have to learn to fall on his back and not on his shoulder. And for any NFL fans out there that saw John Gruden's, I guess, quarterback minicamp, Sam Bradford sits down with him, and Gruden was really getting on him about, hey, you need to make sure that you fall on your that you fall correctly, because the way you're falling right now, it's on your shoulder. So if you're paying a guy $20 to $30 million to go in there and he gets hurt, it's questionable. But I like the pick overall. Sam Bradford, I think he's going to be a solid, solid quarterback. And the interesting thing here is with this first and second round of the NFL draft this year, you might have to deem it the character draft. You know why? Jimmy Clausen comes in, has some questions about his character, about his attitude towards other players or coaches. And then you have Tim Tebow. I guess it was the Messiah. Very religious. Nothing wrong with that. People fall in love with his character. And then we see Josh McDaniels, the head coach of Denver, gives up three draft picks to move up to number 25 overall and select Tim Tebow. This after two picks earlier selecting wide receiver Demaryius Thomas out of Georgia Tech. Now, overall, I like the selection of Tim Tebow. I like him as a player. But I don't know about the trade exactly, because the picks that Josh McDaniels had coming into this draft, he got from the trades with Jay Cutler last year, and from this summer, trading away Brandon Marshall from the Broncos to the Dolphins. He did a great job, McDaniels did, and the front office of Denver, and making sure they got enough in return for those draft picks. Now, what have they done with those draft picks? It's interesting. They select a quarterback. They give away three draft picks, one in the second, one in the third, one in the seventh, to move up to that number 25 spot and select quarterback Tim Tebow. Now, they already have Kyle Orton there. They already have Brady Quinn there. The interesting thing is, Orton and Quinn are both in the final year of their contracts. So what happens if both leave after this season? Then you have Tim Tebow going in there, just 1 year of experience. Maybe he doesn't start this year. Maybe he does. Who knows? All I'm saying is that 1 year of NFL experience, and then he's going to be the starter after that? I don't know. I think he's a guy that needs 2, 3, possibly 4 years of learning in that backup role before he can really come in and do a decent job like we saw Aaron Rodgers do in Green Bay. Or he's not going to be a Mark Sanchez that comes in and really tears up the league from the get-go. This guy has a lot to work on. We also have his throwing motion. I like his throwing motion now. I'm not going to knock it. But from what I've read, Peter King, SI.com, we all know him, wrote an article along with that Sam Bradford piece in that Sports Illustrated about Tim Tebow and the delivery and the mechanics of him. The thing that's interesting here is his decision-making. He has to learn to, I guess, either get rid of the ball, I guess what he's been doing at Florida, whenever he gets under pressure, instead of throwing it away, he tucks it and runs too quick. Or he makes dumb decisions, tries to tuck it and run, and gets sacked. So that's going to be something that Josh McDaniels has to work on. Now, we all know Josh McDaniels, as we said, traded away Jay Cutler, led his team to an 8-8 overall mark, then traded away Brandon Marshall, now brings in Tim Tebow. It's interesting, because what if Josh McDaniels is fired a year or two from now, and Tim Tebow is left there? You gave away so many draft picks to move up and take Tebow. Then McDaniels leaves and Tebow's left alone. It's going to be an interesting decision in Denver. And we'll actually get the thoughts, as we said, from Mike Kliss, the Broncos reporter for the Denver Post. We'll get his thoughts on what that means for the team. And later on in the show, we actually talk about offensive tackle for the Denver Broncos, Ryan Clady Torres Patel, attended on Wednesday playing basketball. So that might affect the quarterback, obviously, there, because they're not going to have as good as protection there. But moving from the selections to the draft day trades, quarterback Jason Campbell, he's gone. He goes from Washington, now out to Oakland. And another trade, Seahawks get running backs Lendale White from the Titans and Leon Washington from the Jets. I like both trades, honestly. The interesting thing is we've seen the Four Letter Network earlier this week. They came out and said Jamarcus Russell, the current quarterback under the Oakland Raiders, he might be gone or he might stay. We don't know. But quarterback Jason Campbell, I see him as the starter. And you know what? I like it. But the Raiders, they're still 3 to 4 years away. But at least their first overall pick in this draft, the linebacker, Rolando McClain out of Alabama, I like that because you know why? That's the first, I guess, good first-round selection for the Raiders probably in close to a decade. I mean, they selected an offensive tackle. He was questionable. They selected Janikowski. That's probably about the only pick that really worked out. Last year, they selected a wide receiver. The name escapes me at this point, but that wide receiver really hasn't done as much. And Jamarcus Russell, obviously, we don't know if he's going or staying. One thing quickly I want to point out here, looking at the future of the Oakland Raiders briefly here, in that AFC West, it's the division that really nobody has the crown. Yeah, the San Diego Chargers won 11 straight regular season games last year to close out the regular season, but when you look at their overall body of work, what have they done in the playoffs? Nothing. And I see the Chargers possibly, maybe after this coming season, maybe starting to rebuild. Denver's rebuilding, Oakland's rebuilding, Kansas City's rebuilding, so that division is there for a taking. And finally, Oakland makes a good first-round pick, and I like their overall depth of the draft. Maybe 2 or 3 years down the road, maybe Al Davis has finally got it right. Maybe he's finally doing a good job in selecting the right players. But we'll have to see if Russell stays or goes and what they do in the coming year's drafts. Now, the other trade that I want to get to before we get to a quick break here, the Seahawks get running backs Lendale White, he's from the Titans, and Leon Washington from the Jets. Obviously, we know Pete Carroll, the new head coach there, he's had a good body of work so far this offseason. He traded for quarterback Charlie Whitehurst from San Diego. Apparently, Charlie Whitehurst might be the quarterback of the future there for the Seattle Seahawks. Who is Charlie Whitehurst? I have no idea. I still don't know who he is. He's some third or fourth year player, never played a down in the league, backed up Phillip Rivers for the past 3 or 4 seasons, and Pete Carroll gives up a couple draft picks to acquire him. Now, Matt Hasselbeck is still there. What did they do in this draft? Didn't select a quarterback. So that's still a hole there. But their running back situation, very, very, very much improved. It's been an interesting situation there in Seattle. Ever since Sean Alexander left, you haven't had an all-pro running back there. They tried to bring in Julius Jones. They tried to bring in TJ Duckett. Hasn't worked out. Lendale White had a bad season last year. But you know what? Maybe his attitude wasn't right because that he knew he was backing up Chris Johnson. How is he going to get to play a ton of downs by backing up Chris Johnson? He's not. So he goes to a coach and Pete Carroll, Lendale White does, that knows his talents, played for him at USC. He might revive his career there. Leon Washington, the same case. He backed up Sean Green, backed up Thomas Jones at New York. Didn't get that much playing time. He's had flashes of brilliance here and there. But with these two guys, neither of them are going to be relied upon to run that team. But the interesting thing, Leon Washington leaving the Jets, that leaves now the New York Jets with running backs Sean Green, LaDainian Tomlinson, and their new draft pick, Joe McKnight from USC. Sean Green, I don't know if I see him as an every down back. LT, definitely don't see him as an every down back. I don't get it. I know I'm a Dolphins fan. I might be a little biased. The Jets, Antonio Cromartie, some head issues. Jason Taylor, I think he's washed up. Who else did they acquire? Santonio Holmes. Guys had, what, 3 rests within the past, I don't know, 3 or 4 given seasons. Came out a month ago and said, nice morning to wake and bake. I'll let you make your interpretation there. And then they get rid of Thomas Jones and try to replace him with LT, who honestly hasn't done anything within these past 2 seasons. I don't see the Jets really doing it for me. Yeah, they might contend for the division. They might contend for the wild card. But everybody anointing the New York Jets as the next team to win this AFC crown, I don't see it. But a lot of teams got better. A lot of teams got worse in this draft. I think the Raiders were one of them getting Jason Campbell. I like the Seahawks with the running backs. One last thing before we get to a break here. A player to watch out for going forward in the future. The mystery relevant pick. A wide receiver from Weber State. I believe his name is Tim Tune. Apparently this guy, I was listening to an interview earlier this week on the Jim Rome show. He had Detroit Lions head coach Jim Schwartz on. And apparently Tune is a guy who served missionaries overseas. And at one point, in Africa, he was kidnapped. Now, he's made it back from there. He made a career out of Weber State, one of the better wide receivers there, in that conference as well. And he's the final pick in the NFL draft. Now, a guy that was kidnapped overseas and survived to talk about it, I don't think he's going to be afraid for anything in the NFL. And this is definitely a guy I'm pulling for. Tim Tune, wide receiver, Mr. Irrelevant pick, goes to the Detroit Lions. Keep that in mind. That's something to watch out for. But when we come up, we have Denver Post reporter Mike Kliss, the Broncos beat writer. He's going to come on, tell you of his decision before the draft day came to say why the Broncos were going to select Tim Tebow, and he's going to defend the pick. He'll tell us why it's actually a good move for the Denver Broncos. And that's right, after that interview at 1:30, we're going to have Thomas Frank back on the show joining us. Stay tuned for that. It's the Red Zone on Com Radio.
You're listening to the Red Zone on Com Radio. Now back to your two hosts, Thomas Frank Carr and John Wall.
And welcome back to the Red Zone. We appreciate all of you folks sticking with us today on a 1.5 hour special here on the Red Zone on Com Radio. And earlier this week, I was privileged enough to sit down and talk with Mike Kliss. He covers the Broncos for the Denver Post. He talked about everything from the draft. I talked to him on Monday after the draft, so we touched on Tim Tebow and all that stuff. Now, this was before Ryan Clady, the offensive tackle for the Broncos, tore his patella tendon, so we weren't able to touch on that topic, but he shared his thoughts on other very interesting topics. So let's get to that interview now. He's the man that predicted the future, and you will find out why shortly. We're talking to Mike Kliss of the Denver Post. He covers the Broncos. You can check out his work anytime online at denverpost.com. And Mike, before we get to the breakdown of the draft, for our listeners out there, for any NFL fan out there, take us through what you are doing as a reporter in the first few rounds of this draft.
They have they put the media, the Broncos do, in their team conference room, where Josh McDaniels would have his full squad meeting. And so we're in there, and we're watching. They put on the NFL Network on the big screen in front of us, and we're kind of waiting for him to come down. I had the Broncos drafting Tebow the night before. I went out on a limb and put it up online that, the more I think about this, the more I think Josh McDaniels is going to go ahead and take Tim Tebow. And I listed 6 or 7 reasons why. And so I was kind of waiting for him. I also had convinced, now the Broncos wouldn't confirm that. What I did get confirmed is that they were not going to sit at number 11. They were going to trade down. You still need a partner. So when you go out there as a reporter and you've got sources and you report that they're going to trade down and they're going to take Tebow, you're a nervous wreck until they actually trade down and take Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
So as it got to number 11, I was relieved that they traded down to 13. Relieved again that they traded down to 24. And then they moved up to 22 and took the receiver, and it was like, oh, man. No offense to Demaryius Thomas, but I was kind of looking for Tim Tebow. And then they made another trade where their second, third, and fourth round picks went to Baltimore to get into 25. And they took Tebow, and that was considered. Never mind what it meant to everyone else. It was a victory for the Denver Post because we had gone out there and said as much. And that's kind of the idea. You like it when your stories come true.
So you're out there during this first round of the draft almost hoping that Tebow gets picked. I mean, obviously, you wrote that article before this draft happened. I mean, what did Tim Tebow actually do before draft day got here? What did he do with the Broncos front office to make them fall in love with him?
Well, first of all, and I have in fact, I found this out today, that their romance with Tebow began at the Combine. They have a 15-minute interview. Each team has a 15-minute interview with up to 60 prospects. And the Broncos, you know, some people come in here and they only interview 20 guys. You know, Mike Shanahan, for instance, I don't think he ever interviewed a guy that he drafted at the Combine. He just didn't believe that. He went strictly from the film and their production in college. And there's something to be said for that method, too. But Josh McDaniels, he interviewed 60. He filled up his card, and Tim Tebow was one of them. And after they interviewed Tebow for 15 minutes, they came away and said, "We got to look closer at this guy." And so they did more research on him. Josh does know Urban Meyer very well, and there was a lot of conversation back and forth there. He started studying film more closely at Tebow, and then Tebow came in Thursday, exactly a week before the draft. Tebow did not hear from the Broncos after the Combine until he was brought in for a visit on Thursday. And then on Monday, first of all, after they were done with all the visits, you get 30 visits. The Broncos had 30 people come in. And then on Sunday after the visit, so Sunday, this past Sunday, they went to Texas and saw Colt McCoy. They had plans on McCoy in the second round if Tebow didn't work out in the first. And then they went Monday morning and worked out Tim Tebow. That was Josh McDaniels and Brian Zahners worked him out personally. And then Monday afternoon they went to Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, and worked out Demaryius Thomas. So the fact that they took Thomas and Tebow after they visited with him on Monday, I think that also tells you that Colt McCoy was their backup plan at quarterback if they did not get Tim Tebow.
We're talking to Mike Kliss. He covers the Broncos for the Denver Post. You can check out his stuff anytime online at denverpost.com. Is Broncos head coach Josh McDaniels, is he courageous or foolish for making this move?
Well, it depends on who you talk to, because you're getting both. And I think even if you call him foolish, the courageous part has to be part of two. You can question his wisdom. You know, it's all about what you think of Tebow. You know, to be honest, I was out there whenever someone asked me to talk about Tebow when he came in and visited. I said I didn't think he would take. I didn't think the Broncos would be Tim Tebow's team because Josh McDaniels runs a real system-specific offense, and Tebow to me seems like the anti-system quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of a freelancer. What he does is unique to other quarterbacks, and so I didn't see him, you know, dropping back, progression number one, progression up number two, hitting this guy number three. He's a guy that kind of blows up all formulas and all equations, a break the mold type of quarterback. So I didn't see him fitting the Broncos. However, I also presented caveats that Josh McDaniels, as an offensive mind, with his offensive background, I mean, just so everyone knows, he was the offensive coordinator of the New England Patriots when Tom Brady threw 50 touchdown passes and the Patriots broke all those records during their 16-0 season of 2007, the best offense in NFL history. Josh McDaniels was the offensive coordinator on that team. That's how he got to this point right now. And I could see him being enamored or intrigued by the possibility that in Tebow he had a unique weapon. He had a guy that you can't really game plan for. He bucks conventional wisdom. And in today's NFL, where these defenses are filled with players that are 6'4", 8 ounces of body fat, and can run 4.6, and they're 245 pounds of muscle, that red zone in particular gets so crowded in there, you better have either A, great passer like Manning and Brady and Breeze and Phillip Rivers, or B, you better have a trick up your sleeve. And Tim Tebow, I think the Broncos have a trick up their sleeve. And I guarantee you, we're going to see a lot of Tim Tebow as a rookie, even though he's not going to start, even though he's not ready to become an every-down quarterback as a passer, definitely a project as a passer. But he can be very effective, 6 or 7 plays a game as a rookie with the gimmick-like packages.
So you have Tebow going 6 or 7 plays a game. You still have quarterback Kyle Orton there. They did trade for Brady Quinn earlier this offseason. What is the future, I guess, maybe in 2010 with the quarterback situation?
2010 is this year. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
2010, I see Orton as the starter. I see Quinn as the backup and Tebow as number three. I don't know this for a fact that the question will be whether they dress three quarterbacks on game day. Philadelphia did it this past year with Michael Vick.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Cobb was the backup, and McNabb was the starter. I think the Broncos might do that. I'm not positive. But I do know that Tim Tebow will, maybe not in the first couple games, but at some point early in the season, Tebow will be dressing on game day, and they will have some packages for him.
We're talking to Mike Kliss for the Denver Post. He covers the Broncos. You can check out his stuff anytime online at denverpost.com. And looking at not only the quarterback situation, but McDaniel's overall job he's done so far, obviously we all know before this Tebow pick, got rid of Cutler, got rid of Brandon Marshall. Can we, I guess, fairly judge McDaniels as a coach at this point in his career, or should we wait 2 or 3 seasons?
Well, you know, for all that's happened here, he inherited a team that was 8-8. He completely tore it down and rebuilt it, and it was 8-8. That's all you got right now. He's 8-8 in his first season as head coach, despite everything. Everyone wants to analyze his moves individually. It's really about the sum. It's not about the parts. It's always been that way in the National Football League. Who cares if you got the better of a trade? You know, I use this for an example. The Chicago Bears had the greatest first-round draft of all time in 1965. They took Gale Sayers, I think, with the third or fourth overall pick. And then with, I think, about the 10th pick, they took a center from Illinois named Dick Butkus. Okay, you can't do better in a first round to get Sayers and Butkus in the first round. But the Bears never won. So, hooray, they had a great draft in 1965. And everyone says you got to have a great draft and you can't miss. Well, they certainly didn't miss. They had two of the greatest, you know, players of all time, one for each side of the ball, and the Bears never won. It was the Green Bay Packers era. And so it's about winning, and right now, as much as everyone wants to pick apart individual moves made by McDaniels, all that matters now is, you know, they started off 6-0. He looked great. They finished 8-8. He doesn't look so great. So let's see.
Final question for you. Looking at Denver's overall draft, I mean, obviously outside of Tebow, outside of Demaryius Thomas, they also picked up a couple of offensive tackles and centers and corners and another wideout as well. I mean, obviously not putting a grade on this. Did Denver still, do they still need to address a certain position at all?
Well, after the draft, they signed the inside linebacker from the Miami Dolphins. And as soon as the draft is over, I shut it down. So I the name Akin
Adele or something like that.
Yeah, ninth year linebacker, inside linebacker. Mm-hmm. They tried to get a inside linebacker in the second or third round. Trading for Tebow, they were left with kind of a gap between the second and third round. It was, for instance, they had a gap between 25 and 45 in the second round, and then a gap between 45 and 80 in the third round. So there was a couple linebackers that came off the board in that span that they liked. I think they like Brandon Spikes in the middle. I think they like Koa Misi as an outside linebacker, hybrid pass rusher. I still think they need one more pass rusher. They got the inside linebacker from the Dolphins by signing him as soon as the draft was over. So I think they're okay. They came in here with a great need for number one receiver, and they took Thomas. They came in with a great need to get a center, and they got J.D. Walton of Baylor, and they really strengthened their interior offensive line, which they needed to do. And then they got the wild card in this whole thing, which is Tim Tebow. So, you can put a grade. I know some people have given them an F. The downside is they took a risk at quarterback and two receiver with broken feet. Yeah. Eric Dicker has that Lens-Franc, and Thomas has a fractured fifth metatarsal. So there's a chance of a bust here. This draft has a chance for a bust. It's also a chance for a high reward. This draft will always be will always go as long as Tim Tebow goes.
He's drinking the Tim Tebow Kool-Aid. He's Mike Kliss of the Denver Post. You can check out his work at denverpost.com. Hey, Mike, we know you've been extremely busy these past 2 weeks. We appreciate you coming on tonight.
Okay, thank you.
And again, that was Mike Kliss of the Denver Post. Some awesome stuff there, insight into Denver. We want to say thanks again to him. But coming up in the next segment, we have Thomas Francoeur rejoining us here in the studio. That's right. The man of the hour is back. We'll have him on the show. And guess what topics we're touching on? Well, there was a rookie wide receiver that was offended by name calling and a former Pro Bowl receiver that recently signed with the Washington Redskins. We'll tell you what that means for the NFC East. Stick around. It's the Red Zone on Com Radio. Maybe the NFL offseason, but for us, things are just getting started. The NFL Draft, free agency, trades. Find all of the information on the NFL right here on the Red Zone. Now back to your two hosts, Thomas Francoeur and John Walker.
Welcome back to the only show on Com Radio where yo mama jokes are acceptable. That's right, you are on the Red Zone. This is the Red Zone. I'm Thomas Francar alongside John Walk. John, we are talking about your mama jokes and inappropriate business behavior, and I'll tell you why. Because during the interview process at the NFL Combine, Dolphins GM, your boy, Jeff Ireland, asked wide receiver Dez Bryant if his mother had ever worked as a prostitute. Now, John, as a man with a mother, and as a man who is about to be married, how would you feel if someone came up to you and said, is your mother a whore, or is your mother a prostitute?
It's interesting. I was thinking about this a few days ago.
Are you gonna defend Ireland? I have to. Is this the fan talking, or is this John Walk talking?
I'm gonna defend Ireland, but before I get to that, the thing I want to point out in this topic, whenever there's sex involved and there's our mom involved, and you put those two together, it's just a very not pleasant situation for anyone out there in the world. We don't like when these two subjects are combined. I mean, obviously, we have cougars, right? 40, 50-year-old, you know, ladies.
You're bringing up cougars.
And everything like that. But
I love it.
Yeah, and we crack on our friends about their mom being hot and all that stuff. But when it's our mom, we don't like it. And I can see why Dez Bryant is upset by this. But that being said,
it's also not a joke here. He was being serious.
Exactly. And that's the thing. He's being serious because Dez Bryant enters this discussion with a lot of baggage. Yes, he should get credit for overcoming all of this. His mom was 16 when Dez Bryant was born, and apparently his mom and his grandmother both went to jail for, I guess, distributing or having marijuana or something like that. And Dez Bryant overcame that, and he's gotten to this level, and then he forgets his cleats and his workout. And it's interesting. The main thing here, the NFL pretty much tells you that you guys have to have players that are clean. And if you don't and they get in trouble, we are going to fine you. Plus, when you combine that, these teams are paying their players $20 to $30 million guaranteed. If I'm going to pay you $20 million in guaranteed money, I should be able to ask you whatever the heck I want.
I just want to know how it's relevant. I mean, that's like, hey, is your dad gay? How does that have anything whatsoever to do with Dez Bryant catching balls?
I think,
no pun intended.
On the field, it's interesting. Yeah, he does have good skills, but off the field, he possibly could get into trouble because you're trying to inquire about his background. What has he learned as a kid? What has he learned as a teenager?
Then ask.
And if he's brought up,
it's not
his fault if his mom was a prostitute. It's not Dez Bryant's fault. But if he's brought up around that atmosphere, he may think otherwise about certain problems, and he may have an inkling to, I guess, get into trouble more often. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, where what is this question relevant to his skills on the field? It's not his skills on the field. It's off the field. We want to know, is this guy going to get into trouble? Is he going to go to jail? Is he going to have drug problems? And when you look at players, I mean, in the past, I mean, we see Pac-Man Jones, Dennis Rodman, J.R. Ryder, Allen Iverson. What do they all have in common? Their dads weren't around. Dez Bryant didn't have his dad around, so he had to rely on his mom. And if his mom went to jail, if his mom was a former prostitute, if that was his role model, and you want to know if you're going to be drafting this guy who has problems, I mean, he was suspended for lying to the NCAA, he has a ton of baggage problems, and if you're going to be paying him $20 million in guaranteed money, you should be able to ask him whatever you want.
I see. I have a problem with whatever you want, because that gives a lot of a leash to guys like Jeff Ireland. There comes a certain point where private is private, and, you know, it's his mother. That's my argument. It's his mother, and it's, to me, I understand what you're saying, but phrase the question differently. Ask him in a different way. You don't have to come out and, like,
We don't know the context of the question, though. It could have been, hey, was your mom a prostitute? Or it could have been Dez Bryant saying, yeah, my mom went to jail, you know, because she was out in the streets doing this and that. And Jeff Ireland goes, wait, so your mom was a prostitute? Like, maybe he's trying to be inquisitive. Maybe he's trying to be sensitive. We don't know the context of the question. Like, for example, say you're at work with somebody and you go up to a girl and be like, hey, you look nice today. But then you go up to a different girl and you say, hey, you look nice today. Obviously, two same exact sentences, but you say in a different manner. I mean, if we don't know the context of how he questioned this. Obviously, no matter how he questioned it, it's still interesting that he brought that up. I am defending Jeff Ireland because you're paying $20 million in guaranteed money. Plus, you get fined by the NFL if you have problems, if you have players who have problems. But moving on from that.
John's all fired up today.
Exactly. Moving on from that. Apparently, two wide receivers, one a former Pro Bowler, have now signed with the Washington Redskins this week. Veteran wideouts Joey Galloway and Bobby Wade have both signed free agent contracts with Washington. So now that will help out the new quarterback, Donovan McNabb, going forward.
Meh.
And the new head coach, Mike Shanahan. Do we like those moves?
Not really, because... They're both almost old enough to collect Social Security at this point. I believe Joey Galloway is 38, which is great and young in the scheme of life, but in the scheme of football, he really needs to hang it up pretty soon because he came in the NFL as a speed receiver, and at 38, you don't have the same speed anymore. So I don't see this as being at all relevant. And Bobby Wade, I mean, he's a good possession receiver, but as far as like a top-tier talent, they have... Devin Thomas on the team who needs to, you know, show that he's worth a first-round pick. They have Malcolm Kelly on that team, I believe. So they've got some younger guys on the team, but they needed some veteran leadership. I just don't know that this is going to be the veteran impact guy they were looking for.
Plus, overall, when you look at the draft, they got Trent Williams, the offensive tackle, with the number 4 overall pick out of Oklahoma in the fourth round. They only had one pick in the first three rounds when I'm looking at it right now, so obviously it's not helping them. Yeah, and in the fourth round, they got a linebacker. Later rounds, a tight end, wideout, center, offensive tackle. So it's an interesting team going forward. We talked about it a few weeks ago. Donovan McNabb and Mike Shanahan, both guys who are trying to prove themselves still in the league that they can get it done. Now, when you look at McNabb, obviously along with Galloway, what type of weapons will he have to even throw to this year? Because he goes from an Eagles team where he has weapons all around them, and then he goes to Washington. Clinton Portis, kind of washed up to me. I mean, I see McNabb having to do more. I don't think that's going to help him.
Well, I think he's going to not have to do as much in the sense that they're going to be running the ball a lot more in Denver. The best way to transition a team that doesn't have a whole lot of offensive talent is just grind it out on the ground. And I think with drafting Trent Williams, you get a blindside protector who can pass block, but he's also going to be able to get out, and he's a big guy on the running game. So I think you're going to see, and especially with that loaded backfield, they've got Willie Parker, they have Larry Johnson, and Clinton Portis. Even if they're all older guys, they've all have something to prove. There's still a little bit left in the tank. With a three-headed attack like that, they're going to be running the ball more than they're going to be throwing the ball. Mm-hmm. But as, like you said, there are questions as to the viability of the weapons around Donovan McNabb. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But at the same time, you've got to give these young guys a chance. Devin Thomas, like I said earlier, has to step up. That is the key to me. If he doesn't, then it's gonna cause problems for the Washington Redskins because they don't really have a legitimate explosive threat on that team. So we'll have to see, I guess.
It's going
to
be an interesting NFC East. I mean, 2 years ago, this was the dominant division, and now it seems like almost every team is in rebuilding mode aside from the Eagles.
We're going to move on now to something that shocked me a little bit. The New York Jets drafted a guy named Vladimir Dukas. That's a manly name right there. But they also, in lieu of that drafting of Vladimir, I just love saying, I'm just going to say it, Vladimir, they released Pro Bowl guard Alan Faneca. Faneca had been in the Jets locker room for, I think, 2 or 3 years at this point. Signed from the Steelers, now is reunited with his old coach Ken Wisenhunt in Arizona. He signed a 1-year, $2.5 million deal, and presumably it's going to be the left guard in Arizona. So, John, initial reactions, good idea for the Cardinals, obviously, but for the Jets, is this a good idea?
Releasing Alan Faneca, a veteran guard, especially when you have a young quarterback in Mark Sanchez, who pretty much needs all the veteran help that he can get. It's not going to help Sanchez going forward. And we saw last year down the stretch, Mark Sanchez really struggled under pressure. And with Faneca gone, he's going to have even more pressure. Yeah, you bring in a rookie offensive lineman, maybe, I guess, to get younger at that position. But if you're Rex Ryan, I mean, maybe Faneca's washed up. We don't know because we're not around the entire team the entire season. But the guy can still play. I mean, he's only, a few years removed from a Pro Bowl. It's
right.
Not like he's been injured and out all this time. He's been playing. He's been doing a decent job. We haven't heard much where they're blaming Alan Faneca on letting guys get past him and giving up sacks. But when you look from going to the Jets to the Cardinals, I would say they've done a very good job so far. They picked up Alan Faneca. Plus, in the draft, they got Dan Williams, the D-tackle out
of
Tennessee.
That's a steal.
Yes, at the number 26 overall pick. I mean, Dan Williams, he was expected to go number 12 to the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
And he falls the whole way to the end of the first round, and they still get, I think, a top 10 defensive line, or excuse me, a top 10 draft prospect. In Arizona, you need all the help you can get, because it's got... I think now with Anquan Boldin gone, with Kurt Warner gone, that team, I don't see them doing as much as they did last season. Maybe in a rebuilding mood for the Cardinals going forward. But one quick thing that we want to mention here before we get going. Seattle Seahawks tackle Walter Jones has retired from the NFL. He announced it just a couple days ago. And in his honor, the Seattle Seahawks are going to retire his number 71 jersey. And also, Governor Christine Gregoire of Seattle, she's declared April 30th every single year as Walter Jones Day, urging all citizens to join her in saluting his remarkable career, which is really interesting. I just wanted to mention that quick because he's a good former guy. Yeah, former Pro Bowl, you know, offensive lineman. He's done a lot for the NFL, and being that we talk in the NFL, we want to give him credit. But coming up, there's another veteran in the NFL, and who is that? It's Brett Favre. Apparently, new information just sprung a few hours ago that could affect Favre's decision to either come back or retire, and it's serious. We'll tell you
Favre
what that
watch.
Is next. It's the Red Zone on Comm Radio.